The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, Feb 6, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show, interviews from Earth One. Today, it's the triumphant return of my favorite national security author, the great Malcolm Nance. Of course, he's the author of The Plot to Destroy Democracy and The Plot to Hack America. Links in the description below. Wanted to talk to Malcolm to get his reaction to the nightmarish State of the Union address last night, as well as the INF Treaty and the latest on Russia, and whether we're all doomed, right? Oh, and I have to ask him whether Don Jr. is going to get indicted, too. By the way, if you like what you hear, please support this show by clicking the Patreon link beneath the logo at bobseska.com. So put the kids to bed and hang on tight and get ready for Shouty McShoutface. It's my friend Malcolm Nance.
Hello.
Malcolm Nance, it's Bob Seska. How are you?
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Good, good. Are you, like, on the train, or are you just getting off the train? Where are you?
No, I just got into Philadelphia to where my house is.
Oh, okay, great.
Now, if you give me 30 seconds to get in my car, we can have a decent conversation.
Okay.
With no noise.
What are you driving these days? What kind of car? What kind of car does Malcolm Nance drive?
Well, that depends, because I got a couple of cars.
Okay, of course.
What are you talking about? My car, or the car that I'm just driving. The one that we tool around in, that I go back and forth between Philadelphia and upstate New York in, is a Land Rover LR3.
There you go. Of course it would be. That's a hell of a car.
That's not my car, though. I mean, it's my car, but it's not the car that I drive when I'm home. Because when I'm in upstate New York, right, my car is a Land Rover Defender, a 1985 Land Rover Defender.
Holy
tricked
shit.
Out for expedition.
That's
tricked
right.
Out completely for expeditionary driving. I got it in the UAE. I own 7 Defenders.
Oh, my God.
And I owned 7 Defenders. You know which one I'm talking about, right? It's the safari-looking car?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Boxy.
It's perfect for running over Russians. This is plowing right over Russians,
well,
like Bigfoot.
The funny thing is, this morning, somebody had, it was Molly Jongfast. Uh-huh. Had put out a review of Seb Gorka, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on with Seb Gorka? We haven't heard from him in a while. Well, this is what he's up to. And it reminded me, because, you know, he did an article for a magazine called Recoil, which is actually a magazine that I read,
right.
You know, which is it's a gun shooting enthusiast magazine, you know, and, you know, for these preppers who are one step away, but they do actually do some very comprehensive reviews and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And Gorka was in there as they're like, you know, as they said, the controversial figure, you know, Donald Trump advisor and counterterrorism, blah, blah, blah. And it showed that he drove a Ford Mustang, right? With the license. You didn't know that? The
no,
license
I didn't.
Plate Art O War.
Oh, my God. Are you serious with the O in there, too?
I shit you not. Yes. Art
oh
O War. Yeah. Virginia tag.
Sun Tzu needs to come back from the grave and slap him in the back of the head.
Bitch slap him. And the funny thing is, it gets funnier. He has, so what kind of powerful, you know, muscle car, which, by the way, people in Alexandria, Virginia had tweeted out photos of him parking on the sidewalk.
Oh, Jesus.
Because Art O War couldn't be parked next to regular cars. But then somebody notices, they're like, hey, that's like a four, that's the four cylinder base entry model. You know?
See, now, Malcolm, I totally picture Sebastian Gorka driving the car from the Munsters, the old TVs there. You know that giant jalopy that they would drive around
the
Munsters car?
Munster mobile?
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, no, he wouldn't have enough class for that, because that was a dragster.
Right.
So, you know, that car's still out there. You know, it was like fully loaded, had like three engines or something, and it was like a V10.
Not
for Sebastian Gorka, baby. No, the Gorkinator rolls a four-cylinder, no different than a fucking Toyota Camry. And, did I say a Camry? A Corolla.
Oh, right.
You know?
The Corolla being the discount Camry.
Oh, yeah. Discount. The one that all the taxi drivers in Asia drive because it's like $10,000 and it's four cylinders.
Exactly.
So somebody was like, hey, man, what kind of... And so somebody on Twitter once was like, hey, man, what's your car? And I was like, okay, I'm going to send you a picture of my car. And it's this lifted Land Rover Defender that I had rebuilt in Dubai, and it's like, and we're going to drive it to Valparaiso.
Jesus.
From here down there, we want to do a transit, across North America to South America drive, because that's what Defenders are for, right? Doing like right. London to Cape Towns.
Yeah.
So I've got several, including a very rare 6x6 that's still in Dubai that's coming over. And somebody goes, that's a man's car. And I was like, yeah, pretty much.
Well, yes, of course it is. I see what you're going to do. You drive up from South America into North America. You're going to have to take some caravan dwellers with you, too, on the way up.
No. We just drive down on the way back. They ship it back by container, so we're legit.
I see. Okay.
We'll bring all of our illicit stuff through a port of entry. But so that's how I roll with the Gorkinator.
Nice.
I can't wait till I get my expose on recoil as, flaming liberal veteran hater, because Tucker Carlson dissed me. I don't know if you know that, right?
No, what happened? You got to tell me what happened with Tucker Carlson. Jesus.
Yeah, Tucker Carlson did a whole segment on me. First segment of his show.
About a month ago. Oh, right. Holy shit, that little pinhead. What did he say again?
That my entire Trump-Russia thesis, that I was on Brian Williams, and I was just telling the exact same thesis I've been saying for 2.5 years, right? That this wasn't, an engineered Russian intelligence operation. They manipulated people, and that they're doing this to create this axis of autocracies, which all the evidence in the world is there, right? I mean, you can't avoid this.
Yep.
And Tucker Carlson put it out and goes, this is like the worst InfoWars conspiracy theory, supposed terrorism expert Malcolm Nance is on Brian, he's just like one step away from calling Brian Williams a liar, which is amazing coming from anyone at Fox News. I mean, they lie like 20 times a night.
Yes, of course.
And, it's like Trump going after Dick Blumenthal, right? Or Richard Blumenthal.
Yeah.
And so, I had that segment done on me. And then there was another segment that they did last year about he calls all veterans who support Trump dishonorable. And I didn't say that. I was on Joy Reid. I actually said, no, I don't understand veterans who support Trump's attacks on John McCain.
That's right.
It's dishonorable and disgraceful to attack a combat veteran like that, POW, blah, blah, blah. But they were like, you called all Trump, supporting veterans dishonorable. So that made for a round of death threats.
I'm sure. How are
your... So anyway, that's what I roll.
Well, I was going to say, how are your mentions doing on Twitter right now? Because I noticed last night, there were, Jesus Christ, the trolls were out in full force. And I don't know if you caught the tail end of that.
Not against me. I've noticed that... That the troll army and the bot army were really attacking a lot of people who were going at Tulsi Gabbard.
Right.
They're just like, what do you want, a war? Or, what kind of communist are you? And I had two this morning that I noticed because, if you're really smart, you just never really read your mentions in detail.
Exactly. Yeah, I know that.
The worst thing in the world is to blow them off. And that really upsets trolls.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Tulsi Gabbard. I've been hearing lots of discussion online on social media and so on about her and Russians. I mean, is there anything to that? Obviously, she was the vice chair of the DNC there for a while up until, February 2016 or so. And so I don't know if she had any emails that were horked in that the initial hacking attack against the DNC or what if she's at all compromised. I have no idea. I have no idea what she's all about when it comes to that. It just seems like, because the other day she also retweeted Glenn Greenwald, which was a big red flag for me personally.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, I've never liked Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah.
Because she came out with this whole fully supporting the Assad regime and then went to Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, all right, I see what's going on here. And like you said, she's got the Greenwald left on her back.
Yeah.
First off, that isn't the left anymore. I don't call that the left.
Right.
I call that the libertarian, you know, like the libertarian right.
Yeah.
You know, they're essentially libertarians.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a horseshoe theory.
And the horseshoe theory, where it's not even a horseshoe theory, man. That thing's a fucking wheel at this point.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
They're connected to those guys. They're connected.
Yep.
So fuck those guys.
What's strange, too, is though, I think Glenn Greenwald would mostly hate Tulsi Gabbard, too, because Tulsi Gabbard isn't necessarily on his side when it comes to Israel, for example. So I'm not sure if Glenn Greenwald appreciated that retweet.
Who the fuck knows with Greenwald? I mean, he's right. Such a hack. I mean, he's such, you know, I mean, you know, remember he went after me a couple of months ago, or a few months back.
Oh, yeah.
And we was like, you're calling me a Russian agent. I said, no, I called you a treason facilitator.
That's right.
I said, get your shit right. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, you facilitated a defector, you know, who took America's secrets to Russia. Fucking embrace it, right? Embrace your suck.
Yeah.
Well, and ever since then.
I was going to say, I mean, that's why he continues to defend Russia, of course, is because Edward Snowden is still over there as a guest of Vladimir Putin. So, I mean, there's obvious motivation there from Glenn Greenwald. If there isn't any hacked emails or compromat that they've got on Greenwald, he's at least doing it to protect Snowden. I'm 99% positive of that, at the very least, right?
Hey, I just sent you a picture of my car.
Oh, okay. Oh, great. All right. Now I'm going to check out
Twitter.
I'll check out your car. Oh, my God. That is incredible. You know what? I'm going to drive to upstate New York and just steal your car and leave my car behind. You can have mine. I'm just going to take yours.
I got one in Pittsburgh. The problem is that defenders are so rare in the United States, even though people are bringing them in, that they're Legos, right? That's an 85.
Right.
And I'm right about to have a full automatic transmission put into it from a Land Rover Discovery from like a 2004 Discovery Great. And so it'll make it a modern car.
Yeah, I mean,
it's manual now.
You seem to have a car in like every city now. There's one you've got one in Dubai, upstate New York. You've got one in Pittsburgh. It's just like a thing where there's like everywhere you go, there's a Malcolm Nance car.
No, the one in Pittsburgh is another Defender that's being reworked.
I see.
That's my wife's car.
And
it's having a roll cage put on it.
Why the hell would you want to get rid of the manual transmission on it, though? It seems to me as if that's one of the main selling points, is you don't see those goddamn things anymore.
Well, yes and no. I have, like I said, I've got two Defenders coming back, including the 6x6.
Yeah.
And which is a six-wheeled Defender that seats 14. And I have a hardtop 110 that's a two-door hardtop 110 that was a UAE Special Forces vehicle that this British guy sold me. That's a left-hand drive. All of them are left-hand drive. And that's coming back. That's also going to be an expedition vehicle. So that one will stay manual.
Okay.
So if I want to go rock climbing or something, you know, do that crazy stuff. But the green car is my go-around car. Right, that's my car. So.
Right, that's that's your day-to-day car. It's completely badass, and your day-to-day car is...
We actually call it a day runner.
Oh, right, there
actually,
you go.
Wait a second, do I have that? It's my day runner. Do I have here? What's badass is... So, because, you know, so like I said, the whole Seb Gorka thing went down, and somebody the other day was like, oh, you know, why don't you have a Mustang? You know, or do you have a Mercedes? Somebody was asking me that. I was like, nope.
Yeah, the Mustang, because you really want to have something that's like the most common rental car. Like every enterprise rental car has has the Mustang there in the, you know, in the lot. Jesus Christ. I got to ask you about last night. I got to ask you about the State of the Union last night. You know, I think we both watched the address with the same general mindset. There's a State of the Union being delivered by a compromised agent of the Kremlin with half of the House chamber raucously applauding for him. How is history going to view last night's travesty, Malcolm?
Well, you know, I had a unique perspective because I was in the at the invitation of Maxine Waters. I was in the one of the Senate office buildings there,
nice.
The House office building.
Wow,
they weren't in the heart, the other one. Mm-hmm. And so they were having a pre State of the Union panel, and then a State of the Union watch party. Which, by the time the State of the Union started, I just said, you know what? I'm not going to stand and sit in here. We need to go to a bar. So we left that party. And as we were leaving, trying to cross Washington Avenue, you know, the motorcade did not come down Pennsylvania Avenue. It took a long, wide, circuitous route all around the city and came up through the underpass and then came around, you know, the Washington Harbor, and then came from the south.
Weird.
To the Capitol.
Yeah.
And cut us all off, so we couldn't cross the street. So here's a 40-car motorcade. And of course, I said, well, we got plenty of time, because they're going to be glad-handing and, BSing.
Yeah.
So we went and got, went and did our, went to a bar and watched it. So my initial impression was, it was not the same as many other pundits who seemed to insist that because Donald Trump read from a teleprompter, it was his best speech.
Right.
I agree with the people who said it starts off as a bland speech where he's forced to read these things off a teleprompter and then it turns dark.
Yeah.
You know, which is a Trump special.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had to give him the things that would prevent him from going off script, right? And just blurting these things out anyway. So, yeah. But my favorite part of the entire speech was how he's completely oblivious to the women standing up and essentially taking over his speech in a moment of absolute self-congratulation.
Oh, yeah.
The Democratic women wearing white. And owning him in the middle of his own speech, and then, of course, him degrading the speech by going around and singing happy birthday, even though I thought it was nice that the survivor was there. But I thought it demeaned the entire event.
Yeah, of course, Congress is terrible at singing happy birthday. Who would have guessed that they couldn't perform the easiest song in the world to perform? I think they did the first line 12 times, and that was their rendition of happy birthday there. I wanted to add, going back to the fact that you were with Maxine Waters, I can only imagine what your group must have thought of.
She didn't end up in the bar with us, by the way.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's too bad. But I can imagine what her reaction must have been when Donald Trump was talking about putting aside revenge and moving forward in a spirit of unity. I'm thinking like Da Nang Dick and Low IQ Maxine and Bernie are going to be like, fuck you, Mr. President. You know what? God damn it, you need to start. Why don't you start?
I know Maxine, and I've gone to dinner with her and her husband, Sydney, and, I've hung out with her at events. Mm-hmm. This is I don't want to use that word. This is a phenomenally focused human being. Mm. Okay. She's like Nancy Pelosi. Insults do not affect her. I wonder if she even has an emotion gene. She is just on and she can taste, victory. Mm. And the way that she tastes victory is through the blood of her vanquished foes. And now she is going, Congressman Al Green was there, and he made a very interesting statement because we were in the hearing room for the House Finance Committee. And in the back were these portraits, including a great one of Barney Franks and the present chairman of the committee, whose name escapes me right now. And he says, let me draw attention to these portraits. And the portraits are not small. They're all about 6 to 8 feet tall, right? There are huge portraits on these walls.
Yeah.
And he goes, in a few weeks, that portrait is going to be replaced with the first African-American chairwoman and the first woman to ever hold the seat of chairman to the House Finance Committee.
Right.
And I thought, I mean, the crowd went crazy. And I thought, this is going to hurt some people because she controls the money of the United States.
Yep.
Okay. Not only that, she can find out what happened to the money spent in the United States, right?
Yep.
So it's, you know, if they underestimated her, they did it now at their complete and total peril, and it will be, let's just say it is not going to work out well for those involved.
Yeah, and you know, my motto with all of this, the rule that I keep going back to is Trump always makes things worse for Trump. So what he did is he spent 2 years talking about low IQ Maxine, not even having any comprehension that she was going to end up chairing the committee that could subpoena his tax returns and end up releasing them to the public through some sort of investigation. And so he actually has made things so much worse for himself by going after her, targeting her intelligence, coming with some sort of ridiculous nickname for her. It's all just snowballing on itself, and he's, you know, he's asked for it, right?
He reminds me of those swamp people guys who you know, go around and hunt crocodiles, right? And these are those kind of guys who, you know, there's always the really wise one who tells you, no, you can't underestimate them crocodiles. And then there's the one guy who, you know, is never really in these episodes because he probably, you know, had met his demise some time ago, who sits around and goes, stupid crocodiles, those stupid crocodiles can't get on me. And he's, you know, knee high in water. Right.
Yes.
And Maxine Water is the crocodile under the boat coming from behind.
Yeah. Abso-frickin-lutely. Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
You know, my entire career was to be fully aware of all the potential and real dangers, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you get out of this boat, it's full of crocodiles out there, right? You know, like, never get out of the boat.
Yep.
So Donald Trump is the guy who's like, you know, he's got the flashlight and he's like, stupid crocodiles, I'm, you know, the superior animal. Well, you know what eventually happens, right? Mm. They become the chairman of the Finance Committee and they now control every dollar that flows in and out of the United States.
Yep.
And you get nothing. Good day, sir. Right.
You know, I want to ask you about this, too. I mean, the one part of the speech that I think, well, there was a section about abortion that was just grotesque and morbid, but there was another section where he spent a lot of time introducing World War II veterans and Holocaust survivors. But but during that section, were you like me? I mean, were you shouting Charlottesville, Charlottesville, Charlottesville at your television? Because it seemed to me as if, you know, doesn't anyone remember the fact that he called Nazis very fine people after Charlottesville?
Yeah.
And the gaslighting, huh?
Oh, my God. Well, gaslighting is a profession here. And, you know, that was put in specifically to counteract any accusation of that.
Right.
Donald Trump loves Jews. Donald Trump, you know, understands the meaning of World War II. No, he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump thinks that, you know, Donald Trump thinks that World War II, was limited to, you know, Saving Private Ryan. And I don't think he even has the slightest clue of where the war in Europe was fought. I mean, he's just, look, the man is a functional, not just a functional illiterate.
Uh-huh.
Okay. He is functionally ignorant.
Right.
Okay. Of everything. So he's the kind of guy who's, you know, the Cliff Claiborne, who'll sit there and talk to you about, you know, how, you know, Erwin Rommel, you know, led the invasion of Normandy in, you know, in Japan and took Iwo Jima.
That's right. For God's sake, don't anyone show the president an episode of Hogan's Heroes, because he's going to think it's real. And so, you know, those Nazis, they were funny guys, weren't they? And they never knew about the cave.
Well, he's the kind of guy to think that this is how the Germans are today. Mm. No, you know, he would side with the Nazis, right? Because he hates POWs.
Right.
By his own admission, right? Mm-hmm. So Hogan's Hero was about a clandestine POW two-way communication system, which, by the way, is something that we teach in our survival schools, that there were these, you know, these clandestine networks that would operate both ways from London to the camps,
right?
Which is what made it so interesting. Donald Trump would sit there and think, man, that's just ridiculous. You know, what? I know more about World War II because he's an expert.
Yeah.
So unlike, you know, unlike Cliff Claiborne in Cheers, you know, the know-it-all who sits at the end of the bar with Norm.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has no profession, right? He doesn't even deliver mail, which suffers some hardship. So the problem with this kind of character, you know, he's ignorant Richie Rich. Mm-hmm. So who's grown up to be, you know, a misogynist, who's grown up to be a racist. And he views, and I've said this many times in my book, Plot to Destroy Democracy, where I show how the Russians have co-opted all of the right-wing neo-Nazi extremist groups in Europe and is now propping up entire governments.
Yeah.
Hungary, Austria, funded the Front National in France and AFD in Germany, the Swedish far-right parties.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump sees them and the uniquely white experience that Russia is now pushing as an Orthodox conservative country and viewing that as, you know, his ancestral homeland and his ancestral supporters, and which is why he views Russia and right wing extremist groups as his base.
Yeah.
And he sees nothing wrong with that because they you know, that to coin that old phrase, they like me. They really like me, right?
Yep.
So he will always support them because they look like them. They look like the Republican House,
yeah.
Right? On one side of the room, just all old white men.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side of the room is, you know, diversity and the true image of America.
Yeah, and you know what? The thing that he doesn't understand either in a modern context is that by pulling out of this INF treaty and at the same time threatening to pull out of NATO, he's basically enabling Vladimir Putin to waltz into Europe, right?
I write the entirety of the plot to destroy democracy is how Russia is co-opts Europe completely.
Yep.
And how they create, you know, Brexit was an information warfare operation. The first Scottish referendum was an experiment in information warfare operations and bot deployment.
Yeah.
As was the second. And it was a very close thing. As a matter of fact, when Brexit was going on, Russian bots were pushing Scottish separatism.
Yep.
Same thing with Catalonia and all these places. So Russia realizes you don't invade a country with your people anymore. You co-opt their political party, and they will vote their own nation out of power.
Yeah.
And they will destroy democracy through an election. And Donald Trump is the third leg of the, I call it, you know, the anti-Atlantic tier, whereas all the other U.S. presidents have been, you know, hardcore Atlanticists, understanding that the sacrifices of World War II and World War I led to an alliance which would stop future wars, global wars occurring starting in the European continent and from the East, right?
Yep.
Donald Trump has been steeped in the philosophy by his rich Russian friends, right? Because he doesn't know anything. Mm. He just knows he likes those people. And those people, starting at his two-hour secret briefing at the Nobu restaurant in 2013 during Miss Universe with the 12 richest men in Russia, he came out of there. He went in a blank slate. He came out a completely pro-Russia advocate. And all of his tweets for the next 2 years would ratify that because he thought, I like these guys. They have money. They have hot women. They are like me, right? And they're a bastion of wealth, which Donald Trump sees only as oil and natural gas money, right? But he liked their quote-unquote Russian toughness, right? So this is where Putin saw him as just the easiest patsy. And I'm now writing the third book in my trilogy. I can't tell you, but it starts with the plot to commit. And it's all about how, you know, if Plot to Destroy Democracy was about how Russia co-opted Europe, then the American alt-right, then the NRA and the Christian evangelicals and the Republican Party, and then crafted a worldview around Donald Trump that made him a natural asset, in, you know, a willing asset slash, you know, winning agent of Vladimir Putin through bribery and dangling contracts and coercion, if not complete co-option, then this third book is about all the Americans and how they willingly went along with this. You know, as I've often said, someone asked me in an interview, they said, why would Jeff Sessions go to these meetings and lie? And I said, simple, because there was enough money discussed or promised or spoken about or hinted about that superseded loyalty to the nation. And the only place that amount of money has ever been discussed was Christopher Steele's memorandum about a $19 billion commission on lifting sanctions against Russia and getting the Exxon deal going. Right? Yep. And to paraphrase James Caan in one of my favorite movies, The Way of the Gun, right, where he talks about a $5 million ransom in cash. And he goes, the guy says, where's my money? He goes, money? He goes, that's not money. He goes, $100 is money. He goes, $5 million cash? That's a motive.
Yeah.
So imagine $19 billion and that being given guarantees by Vladimir Putin and his staff that that money is theirs, yours for the taking. The presidency... You know, you would skyrocket into a place that Donald Trump has never been, which is an actual billionaire. And he's being promised this by people, 12 people, including a personal representative of Putin's, who are actual billionaires, multi-billionaires. Estimated there were $200 billion in that room, if you included Putin's illicit money.
Fuck.
And of course you're like, why, of course I love you guys. Of course Crimea is part of Russia. Of course Vladimir Putin's a strong president, you know? And then you find out, you know, Trump was already planning on running for president in November 2012 on the night of election night, right after he had learned Mitt Romney had failed. Within a week, he had already secured Make America Great Again PAC.
Jesus Christ.
So all of this is it's not a conspiracy, right? It's a mindset that manifested itself in a series of actions which had to be hidden. And that, to the intelligence and law enforcement world, is conspiracy.
Yep.
To them, it's just the necessary moves to make this deal pay off. And so they have no problem committing these acts. But because when you're masters of the universe, you're president of the United States, you're going to get away with anything because now you control the system. And that's why, you know, guys like Mike Flynn thought that, you know, with Mike Pence and Donald Trump allowing them to make these calls, they could call the Russians and say, don't worry about Barack Obama. Right. In a couple of weeks, this is all going to change. And what we had all knowingly talked about, we're all going to make money, yo.
Yep.
That's the only thing that could motivate this. It's the only thing. I always tell people about the way that they recruit assets through the acronym MICE: money, ideology, co-option or coercion, and ego. And every one of these individuals was easily co-opted by money. Because when you agree to the money, you automatically set yourself up for coercion to where they can blackmail you. Right?
Yeah.
And if you took that money, your ego already put you in there. The best part is when you get a guy like Trump who will buy into your ideology for free because it will lead him to the money. So you don't have to co-opt him or coerce him. You can just co-opt him. He works for you now.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the standard acronym that all intelligence officers who are recruiting assets around the world use, MICE.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump is just, I think I had a chapter in my book, Chasing Mice, where Donald Trump was just the easiest buy in the world.
You're not getting in an accident, are you? That's not an emergency horn.
No.
Okay.
I'm just sitting here. That's the horn of I've got to get into in 20 minutes. I have to go to Ali Velshi.
Oh, great.
3 o'clock.
Awesome.
He's in New York. He's from Philly. He lives here.
Oh, great.
But now we're going to go talk about Trump rejecting his intelligence briefings.
Yeah. And
he knows everything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And is that one of the most terrifying bits of news that's come down in the past few weeks, is this idea that he absolutely refuses to listen to his intelligence briefers, and where they have to say his name to keep his attention. They have to make scale models for him in order to understand, complete with like Statue of Liberty action figures that he can scale next to the diagrams of North Korea and missile sites. Is this horrifying to you, or just completely not surprising whatsoever, or both?
Well,
maybe.
It's horrifying and completely not surprising.
Right.
Look, in my career, I mean, I spent 20 years on active duty. Then I spent, 14 years, almost 15 years as an intelligence contractor or analyst, where we produce information for a consumer. And some consumers consume it in very different ways. Barack Obama, vacuum cleaner, right? Obama would take, the flip books, that were 4 inches thick of the raw intelligence and analyzed intelligence and defense, intelligence studies. And he would take them up to his private quarters and he would read the hell out of them.
Yeah.
Right? He wanted to be able to see the trends themselves, or to determine, is he seeing a trend that others don't? Mm-hmm. Because as president, you got all the information. And so that was a great way to do business. And collectors like myself, we love that because, I don't want to brag, but I was okay in my time, to the point where, sort of like now I was doing the Nostradamus routine. But it was the little minutia that I was seeing in these trends that would leap out at me and provide what we would call some unambiguous intelligence indicator.
Yeah.
And that's very important. And of course, I don't see it at the, I didn't until recently see it at the strategic and geopolitical level, where the interactions and interests of the United States were important. My job was to blow things up and kill people. So, Barack Obama had to have every aspect of soy farming and, trade as a component of his, intelligence process to keep America awesome, which he did, to the point where we still have 2 years of growth that didn't exist under Trump. Trump is a pen and crayon guy, a crayon and cardboard paper guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that tells you. He's just not going to believe you.
Yeah, and exactly. And one of the reasons why he was manipulated into pulling out of the INF, which seems to me as if pulling out of the INF treaty, Malcolm, is done in cooperation with, not in opposition to, but in cooperation with Vladimir Putin. I think that is abundantly clear. You okay?
No, I think there's more. No, I think I'm fine. Okay. I think there's more to it than that. I think that the Russians understood. First off, I was a child. I was a collector of the 80s, the late Cold War. But I started off right in the Cold War, even though, I explain this in my two introductions of my two books, because people always go, well, you're a Middle East terrorism guy. What do you know about Russia?
Yeah.
Hey, the Russians and the KGB were everywhere. Mm-hmm. I do an op in Egypt. Russians in the KGB. I do an op in Libya, the Russian Navy in the Gulf of Salam area, or, their intelligence apparatus was done by the KGB. Yeah. The Syrians, same thing. We were always, even though we, their client states were our principal target. You cannot ignore a giant freaking bear with missiles all over the place backing them up. So we had to know them just as well as we had to know our target. And of course, when we go to the Middle East, they try to, you know, they try to run assets against us. We're cryptologists, right? These are, you know, that's the kind of people you want to turn. So we were constantly inundated with intelligence briefings.
Right.
So seeing it from this strategic geopolitical levels, something like the INF Treaty takes us back to 1985, when my girlfriend at the time was an army intelligence person living in Heilbronn, Germany, in her top secret facility, because that's where the American Pershing intermediate ballistic missiles were, which were the nukes that were going to destroy the capitals of the Warsaw Pact. And those were the missiles, and the Tomahawk, ground-launched Tomahawk cruise missiles with nukes, were the missiles that the Russians and we created the Internuclear Force Treaty for, to withdraw, which brought the threat to the European capitals on both sides back to strategic ballistic missiles that had to be launched from your respective nations, or air-launched cruise missiles or something like that.
Right.
It literally took the nuclear threat away from Europe. I think Vladimir Putin wants that threat back.
Yeah.
Just the threat of it with his Iskander-M missiles. Donald Trump's a moron. He doesn't understand any of this.
Mm-hmm.
What he thinks is, ooh, my friends over at General Dynamics, okay, and Lockheed Martin want a new, you know, want a multi-billion-dollar contract to create essentially a new version of the Pershing missile to go into the, you know, like the HIMARS and, you know, theater ballistic missile system that we use with high explosives, only with nukes. First off, if anyone who even remembers the end of the Cold War can remember all of the protests in Germany where their motto was Atomkraft nein danke, right? Atomic weapons or atomic works, no thank you. That just wasn't nuclear power plants. It was principally U.S. nuclear weapons in Germany. And it was a horribly destabilizing factor. And it actually brought about the rise of the governments that would allow the East and the West to unify against, you know, the Russia and the United States. And we withdrew those missiles and everybody was happy and Germany's awesome. This would reintroduce a measure of radicalism over there that, you know, this, these are the people who were shooting Americans from, you know, Red Army faction, the old Bader-Meinhof gang, because of these issues.
Yeah.
And by the way, those gangs were funded by Russia back when the Soviet Union was funding left-wing liberal groups.
Oh, of course. Yeah. So, I mean, is this... Is...
So Trump just wants to manufacture new nukes because Bolton's like, this will be awesome. The Russians have a game plan.
Yeah.
And they're going to get Europe.
Well, yeah, and it seems to me as if this, the INF treaty story, pulling out of that, and then also threatening to withdraw from NATO, this all seems part of a set to me. It seems part of an entire plan to destabilize Europe and leave it vulnerable for Vladimir Putin to waltz into first Eastern Europe beyond Ukraine and to seize power there, whether through these active measures that he's using or through, quite frankly, the tip of a series of intermediate range nuclear missiles. It seems to me as if this is all part of a long term strategy by Vladimir Putin. Huh? Is that a decent look at the situation?
Sure, you can read that strategy in the plot to destroy democracy.
of course,
the thing is, no, really, I wrote a whole book about it that was on the Times bestsellers list for 10 weeks last year.
Right.
So you know the point is this. Putin is executing a plan, but it's literally to get rid of parliamentary democracy in Europe. And he's going to replace it with what is happening now. And you know, and that is, you know, a transition away from democracy to where you vote in autocracy. And then that's it. Viktor Orban in Hungary, you know, the OFD government in Austria, which, by the way, was formed in 1952 by two Waffen SS officers who were unabashed neo-Nazis. They are firmly in the, they are funded by United Russia Party.
Wow.
So you know, and as a matter of fact, with the election of the United States, three events were supposed to have happened, four events in a 6-month window that would have ended the world as we know it. And two of those events didn't occur, which stabilized things. Mm. The first was the election of Donald Trump. 1 week after the election of Donald Trump, you had the election of the OFD, Alternative for Austria, in Austria, which put in an ultra-extremist right-wing Russian-backed government. Then there was the attempted coup d'etat in Montenegro, mm-hmm. which the Serbian nationalists were supposed to have massacred the entire parliament and the president and then taken it over as a pro-Serbian government and would have introduced Russian forces to Montenegro to stop NATO. And that plot was broken up by NATO and U.S. Counterintelligence working with the Montenegrins. That would have brought Russian forces to the heart of southern Central Europe and right off of Italy, right? And I spent a lot of time off Montenegro, so, you know, in Bosnia and Croatia. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I went to Yugoslavia in 1985 as one of the first U.S. warships to ever visit there. So, you know, all of that being done, and then the fourth and most serious culminating event, which would have solidified the axis of autocracy and realigned the world from Washington to the European NATO capitals to stand against Moscow, and would have created an alliance of Moscow leading the United States and, you know, being supported by European autocracies. The last event was supposed to be the election of Marine Le Pen in mm-hmm. France.
Yep.
And if it wasn't for the common sense of the French people to elect Emmanuel Macron, that would have been the end of NATO and the European Union. Marine Le Pen said she would pull out of NATO the same day as she would pull out of the European Union. We've had NATO without France before, but they are so structurally involved now over the last 40 years since they came back after de Gaulle that it would have caused it would have fractured Europe like a broken mirror.
Now, as if that wasn't panic-inducing enough.
I have two minutes there, Bob.
Okay, yeah, gotcha. Just one last question for you, Malcolm. As if that wasn't all panic-inducing enough, what exactly is going to happen with Pakistan's nukes if Trump withdraws precipitously from the AFPAC theater? What's going to happen over there? Because that's another thing that's keeping me up at night.
Yeah, well, what's even more interesting is that during his speech where he was mentioning Prime Minister Modi and then insulting a library that India had built in Afghanistan, which did not exist, okay, he brought attention to Pakistan, a reason to keep supporting, you know, the Hekmatyars and the Afghan Taliban, which was he reminded Pakistan that India was making inroads into Afghanistan. Right?
Yeah.
And then he was also showing that he was cutting the budget of support to Pakistan and was throwing all of his support behind India. Right?
Jesus, yeah.
This is not smart.
No.
Okay? He's not even trying to play both sides. You know, so that being said, I mean, you could always see a theater of operations where now, I guess China is now backing Pakistan against India. India's, you know, trying to show its military independence and gather, you know, higher technology to be qualitatively better than Pakistan. But you know what? The great game goes on. The great game is no longer played by the United States, Russia, you know, and Great Britain over Persia and Afghanistan. The great game is really India, Pakistan, and Persia over Afghanistan. And that's why we've had the Taliban and Al-Qaeda being funded and backed by Pakistani inner service intelligence for almost three decades, because they can't afford to risk that they would lose that place, that they would lose that influence, and their western flank would be exposed to India.
Right. It's so immensely complicated, and we've got this nitwit in the White House who probably doesn't understand, or certainly doesn't understand. Anyway,
he's a complete and total moron. I mean, an utter moron.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand any of the things we're talking about.
He doesn't understand anything.
Right?
Yeah.
He doesn't.
He doesn't. One yes or no question for you, Malcolm. Does Donald Trump Jr. get indicted?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to hear. All right, that is good. We're ending on really, really good news. Thank you, Mel.
All right. All right, Bob.
Say hi to
Mr. Take care, man. We'll see you soon.
You bet. Say hi to Mr. Belshi for me.
Will do. All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.